The conference is now being recorded.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. We've got it on mute and we've got the recording started, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. As I said earlier, Thomasina Moore with the law firm of Moore & Moore. I've had the pleasure of having worked with Guardian Ad Litem in various capacities for well over a decade now, and I'm pleased to do this presentation today. There's no getting around it. HIPAA is not a sexy topic. It can be very dry. So for symptomatic relief, I've got Dennis here with me, and he'll do some practice pointers at the end of the call for everybody. When we're talking about HIPAA, basically the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act has three major areas, which include use and disclosure of information, individual rights, and administrative responsibilities. For today's call, we're going to focus on disclosure and permissible disclosure and required disclosure, because that's the area which we think impacts your practice in, for the most part. You could discuss HIPAA all day. You could have a multi-day seminar, but we've only got this 1 hour, so we've tried to compact it to the most relevant points for you. HIPAA, like many statutes, is a very definition-driven statute, so I'm going to spend some time at the beginning going through some of the terms and concepts, so when you're trying to apply them, you will be able to have a little bit more familiarity. I will tell you, if you have a specific situation, you should always go and look at the specific definition, because it is so definition-driven. And if you don't have that specific definition in front of you, you're most likely not going to get the analysis right, or if you do, you might, but it will be much better to look at it. One other thing to keep in mind during the presentation is that HIPAA is a federal baseline. It's not the highest standards possible. States are allowed to have stricter standards for use and disclosure of information, so you also need to be cognizant of applicable state statutes that might come into play and how they also affect the analysis of disclosure. I wanted to start today with just going over the very basics of what is the privacy rule. The standards for privacy of individually identifiable health information, which is the privacy rule, governs the use and disclosure of individuals' health information, and it's referred to as protected health information, or PHI. You're going to see a lot of those shortenings. Legislatures love them, as do lawyers, so they're in there a lot. And also governs the use and disclosure by specific covered entities. And we're going to take a look at what protected health information, PHI, is, and also what is a covered entity. Keep in mind, as I said, that HIPAA is meant to provide guidance on these topics. When it was enacted in 1996, it was an attempt to bring some cohesive guidelines together while giving deference to all 50 states and the different rules that they had based on what they wanted in their particular state. So that's why you're going to see there's a lot of flexibility for states within the HIPAA privacy rule. Provides guidance on what information has to be protected, who has to protect it, and what their responsibilities are in protecting the personal health information. The first term and concept that I wanted to discuss with the HIPAA is the use and disclosure of PHI. And basically, the rule provides that covered entities may only use or disclose PHI as permitted or required by the privacy rule. Use is sharing, employment, application, utilization, examination, or analysis of information within the entity. Use generally occurs internally within the covered entity. For instance, a doctor giving a nurse information, the doctor's office providing information to the hospital. So as far as applying the access statute or ARCH purposes, disclosure is what you're usually talking about. And disclosure is the release, transfer, provision of access to, or divulging in any other manner of information outside the entity. Some terms and concepts that are used in HIPAA also include covered entities. A covered entity is a health plan clearinghouse, or any health care provider who transmits any health information in electronic form in connection with a covered transaction. So it's pretty broad as far as what a covered entity is, but remember, it centers around the idea of the healthcare provider. The information that's protected is what is in the healthcare provider's hands. If the healthcare provider has already given the PHI, the personal health information, to another entity and you seek it from them, such as the department's not a covered entity. So it doesn't have the same principles there. The requirements for uses and disclosure of PHI, there's two. There's either permitted or required disclosures pursuant to HIPAA's privacy rule. There are only two types of required disclosure and six categories of permitted disclosures. For today, we're going to look at required disclosures, what's permitted based on carve-out exceptions to the preemption rule, and then also what's permitted based upon public health and benefit exclusions to the privacy rule, and then do some pointers on how to apply those in your practice if you have HIPAA objections. The required disclosures are to the individual or to HHS if they're doing an investigation. Not going to touch on that. But with the HIPAA privacy rule requirement to the individual, anytime the individual exercises the right to access their PHI, the covered entity has to provide it to them. Here's where definitions become very important. As I said earlier, you know, it's very definition-driven. Individual within HIPAA is defined to include the patient, or in the case of an unemancipated minor, the personal representative of the individual. So parents, guardians, or other individuals acting in loco parenti can exercise the right of the individual to obtain medical information. And what is important to know here as well is when you apply that definition, it's going, pursuant to the statute, you're going to look at your state law definition of guardian or other person acting in loco parenti. Each state gets to define it for itself. That's one of the ways in which HIPAA is meant to be flexible and to be used by each state individually. So when we're looking at practice pointers, how Florida defines those terms, it's relevant for your practice. So just to recap, the HIPAA privacy rule is a federal floor of privacy protection. States can have more stringent requirements. Sometimes they do, and you need to be aware of those statutes as well. They are the first set, or were the first set, of comprehensive federal health privacy protection. It restricts the use and disclosure of personal health information and then provides rights for individuals who are the subject of that personal health information. I want to move and also talk a little bit here about the preemption provisions of HIPAA. I've seen it argued, and others out there I'm sure have seen more than me, that HIPAA preempts the access statute and that it prevents you from getting access based on these preemption provisions. However, due to HIPAA's exemptions and also exclusions, that argument's just wrong. Preemption is the judicial principle of asserting supremacy of federal over state law. There's field preemption and conflict preemption. What you have generally here is the argument, and I've never seen field, I've only seen arguments of conflict preemption between HIPAA and the state law. For purposes of applying HIPAA, pursuant to the Code of Federal Regulations, state law is broad. It's the Constitution, it's a statute, it's a state regulation, it's a state rule or a state common law or any other state action having the force and effect of law. So when we say state laws, it's not just the statute, the Constitution, it's broader. And so keep that in mind as well. The definition of contrary as it relates to preemption by HIPAA is also statutorily defined, and it means that it possible for a covered entity to comply with both the state and federal requirements, the impossibility test, or the provision of state law is an obstacle to accomplishing the full purposes and objectives of the administrative simplification provisions of HIPAA, which is called the obstacle test. I've seen several Office of Civil Rights presentations. I just watched one recently on this topic, and the gentleman speaking said that they could not even think of a scenario where you would have the obstacle test preempting state law. And as I say later in the PowerPoint, they've never found a state law to be preempted by HIPAA. So if they, someone asks your judge to do that, just make sure they understand that that would be a first for even the Office of Civil Rights. The general rule is, though, that if the state law is contrary to HIPAA's rule, then HIPAA controls and the state law is preempted. And keep in mind, it's unless one of the specified exceptions applies, which we'll go through. There is an exception, carve-out provision in the rules for child abuse and public health. How that's defined and interpreted and how it should be implied might not be as intuitive as a cold reading of the statute would be, but the statute itself, the provision, which is at 160.203, provides that the provision of state law, including state procedures established under such law as applicable, provides for the reporting of disease or injury, child abuse, birth or death, or for the public health surveillance, investigation, or intervention. There are those who want to argue that or have said, well, what does that mean since it says the reporting of child abuse? I think it's important when you apply that to point out what the standard, the rule itself says, and what they say the public policy is behind that. And that, from the rule itself, says that HIPAA expressly carved out state laws on child abuse and neglect from preemption or any other interference. State laws continue to apply with respect to child abuse, and the final rule does not in any way interfere with the covered entity's ability to comply with these laws. So the statute, although it might be read narrowly, if you just looked at that, if you look at the rule and the comment to it, you'll see that it's meant to be applied very broadly for child abuse laws, and they do not want to touch that area. And Dennis will talk a little bit more about that with the practice pointers. Another way that HIPAA preemption has been limited is that HIPAA has built within it certain provisions which minimize any conflict between the HIPAA provisions and any state laws. And these are known as exclusions. So you have the exemptions, which carve out certain laws completely, and then you have the exclusions, which you look at how they are specifically applied, see if you fall within one of the exclusions. And if you do have an exclusion, then your state law is not going to be contrary to HIPAA. The conflict minimization and with the HIPAA privacy rule are basically codified at 45 CFR 164.512. If you remember earlier, I said there were six categories of permitted disclosures, and those are ones that were enacted because they thought it was in the public health and benefit to have these disclosures. Certain disclosures, and we'll get more into these certain ones of these a little bit later on, include whether it's required by law, which is very important to your practice, public health activities, reporting about victims of abuse, neglect, or domestic violence, although that's reporting, so it's limited in its application, and it can be enticing to argue that provision, but really your 39.822 goes under required by law. You also have the judicial and administrative proceedings, which is under E, which Dennis will also touch upon, and then, you know, reporting and disclosure for law enforcement purposes. As I said earlier, these minimization to keep in mind that to date, and you're almost 20 years in, not quite, the Office of Civil Rights has never been presented with a state law that they thought was contrary to HIPAA. Because they have this kind of broad required by law exception, they basically say that, well, if it's required by law because we permit disclosures required by law, then it's not going to conflict with HIPAA. You can comply with HIPAA. So they've never found one that actually conflicts. So just to recap that portion of it, state laws that are contrary to regulations are preempted by the federal requirements unless you have a specific exception that applies. The privacy rule, again, it's the floor of privacy protections. State laws that provide greater protections are permissible, and that where HIPAA permits disclosures that are required or permitted, there is no conflict and no preemption. I wanted to move here into section for practice pointers, but before we do,
presentation mode is now disabled.
give everybody a chance to ask if they have any questions, basic concepts before Dennis gets to the practice pointer. Anyone? We're going to move on then to the practice pointers, and I'm going to defer to Dennis on this.
All right, everybody. Essentially, what it boils down to is that, you know, if you're dealing with this in a courtroom, and from a GAL's point of view, I mean, you could be dealing with it. You could be dealing with it as parents trying to prevent you from getting their records, or you could be even dealing with it with someone trying to prevent you from getting the child's records. So, I find that for the most part, I've really found it always out there. I found the programs to act reasonably in these regards. I mean, I have not encountered the GAL that just likes to voyeur the records, or the program is very good at making sure that we get what we need in this regard, and we always like to protect the child's privacy in that regard. We got to get what we need to give the court the recommendation and to do our job. So when you're faced with those issues, what you need to do is take a look. I mean, your questions are, how do I use all of this practically? Well, I kind of boiled it down into, you've got three basic arguments that you're making. The first one is that it's actually required by HIPAA. I mean, if you look at HIPAA, what Thomasina was talking about earlier, I mean, what you've got in Florida is a situation where the state itself is in loco parentis when, has been made that there's probable cause that a child has been abused, abandoned, or neglected. And you kick in the statutory scheme that's in play. And the statutory scheme that is in play here utilizes the guardian ad litem, for example, to acquire the information or provide the information to the court, as well as children. But from our point of view, we're part of that statutory scheme that is an information provider as well as an advocate. So when that happens, I mean, the state, we tend to think of it as the court or the department being in loco parentis. But what it actually is the state. The state is in loco parentis, and how it chooses to take care of these children is a statutory scheme set up in Chapter 39.
Presentation mode is now enabled.
And there's a couple of good cases out there that you could read that really explain that effectively.
And those cases are contained in the brief that was sent as part of the materials for today's call.
Right, and there's the one in particular that I like would I believe it's Buckner versus Family Services out of the Fifth District. So all of that's really explained in there. But that, without getting into all the details of it, that's really the essence of your first argument. Number one, it's required because you're in a child neglect proceeding. The state's in loco parentis, and the state says we get the records, and that really is the summation of your argument there. When you're talking about, when you're moving on, though, I see two other arguments. The child abuse and neglect laws are exempted from the HIPAA provisions, and if you're looking for the exact site that was just discussed, that's 45 CFR 162.03(c), and really, what that's saying is that the child, child abuse intervention is excluded. Now, I understand, and I had a pretty good question before we started this, because that particular section, if you read 203C, refers to the reporting of child abuse. But if you look again at the interpretations that have been taken out there in other states, such as Ohio and North Carolina, and the interpretation that the Center for Children and the Law with the American Bar Association has given it, they suggest that that's too narrow of a reading to just limit it to the actual report of child abuse. The more accepted interpretation has been that it applies in a much broader way for in the child abuse and neglect proceedings. So that would be your second argument, that the reporting is exempted, or that child abuse and neglect proceedings are exempted under 203C. And then lastly, your third argument would be that HIPAA is a public benefits exception. And in regards to this particular exception, again, it feeds back into the fact that this is a state requirement. It's required by law, and this is where it becomes circular, and this is the reason why the Office of Civil Rights has not found a single law that conflicts with HIPAA in the entire United States. It's because the provision under 512A says, unless provided by law, really. And so 39.822 is that provision by law for the guardian ad litem that allows the guardian ad litem to get the records in abuse and neglect proceeding. So those are the three arguments, basically, that you have and that I would make if I were standing there and somebody raised HIPAA and the judge wanted to know what you thought about it. The next slide in our presentation there looks like Don Draper. Looks like Don Draper confused about what to do next. Yeah. So, well, you know, what we've heard out there in terms of folks that are arguing against us, I mean, it's just very, very confusing. So people will throw out arguments, well, you know, HIPAA only allows you to get the records if you have an authorized order from the court, and that's under 512C. And that's not what we're arguing. That's just a catch-all for any court in any jurisdiction to allow for access to these records if it's relevant to their proceedings. You know, as we've already discussed, you have specific carve-outs in HIPAA for the particular area of the law we're dealing with, and you also have, it's just not applicable to say that you need a specific order for that. That's not saying that you couldn't get an order and that a judge couldn't go in and give you an order, but you require all the notice and opportunity to be heard, the due process associated with getting that order, and that just simply isn't what you're doing out there. That's not what is transpiring in these cases. Another issue that comes up is the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention Act, which actually came about in 1973, and this is often confused as being a part of HIPAA, but it's not HIPAA at all. It's a separate individual act, which is, Florida's got a similar act under Section 397 of Florida statutes, but that's designed to be the law that allows people to seek alcohol and drug abuse treatment and have certain protections and not have to worry about having their confidentiality, et cetera, violated while seeking that form of treatment. When you encounter that, and federally that would be under 42 U.S.C. 290, when you encounter that, we're not going to go into that here because that's another separate issue, but there are two schools of thoughts and arguments there. One is it has the catch-all that, an authorized court order can allow it. You'd need the same procedural safeguards as you'd need to get an order under 512E under HIPAA. As well, and so you can do it that way. And then there's a good argument out there that, again, child abuse and neglect proceedings are always going to be considered good cause when you're dealing with that particular federal regulation. So that's a separate issue, and I've seen them handled both ways. And keep in mind, if you face these issues out there, some folks have done some very good work with addressing these issues with other stakeholders, attorney ad litems, those people that are concerned, rightfully so, about, and parents' attorneys, about protecting the interests of their clients, and we've come to some very good arrangements on these issues that help everybody get what they need in these proceedings, which ultimately is making sure the children are taken care of and they're placed in the right places. So that's really all we have in terms of the broad overview. It's a broad treatment of it, but it's very tailored and specific for what we've seen in this world and how we have addressed it. So I think right now we can go ahead and take it off of this mode and open it up, and if we have any questions,
Dictation mode is now disabled.
And that's going to, we did try to boil it down a lot to focus it. So we find if you have more expansive questions or more specific questions for applying it in your cases. So. Does anybody have any questions?
Thomasine, this is for Sadie. I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
First one is, we sometimes have related civil cases, as I'm sure you know, where they're requesting information from the confidential files, which in the end, depending on the situation, or let's assume that for good cause they should get at least some of the information that's in there based on whatever their complaint is. What do we need to do, if anything, about any information that needs to come over that would be protected health information?
And I'm going to ask everybody out there, I'm sorry, Mercedes, before I respond, to mute their phones now that we have it off the general mute because we can't hear the talking in the background. And Mercedes, to clarify, are you asking as far as related civil cases where a discovery request is sent to the guardian ad litem program?
Yes.
That, Mercedes, is basically what you do pursuant to your normal confidentiality provisions of the statute. Here, because the guardian ad litem program would not be a covered entity.
You don't have
a health care provider, so HIPAA's provisions would not prohibit you from releasing any information. However, there are, as you know better than I do, I'm sure, the ins and outs of it, there are strict statutory provisions relating to the confidentiality of information in the guardian ad litem's hands, so you would follow Chapter 39 and those confidentiality provisions. And this is important. Again, I'm going to keep emphasizing this. HIPAA is a floor. It is not the only privacy rule. There's other ones out there, and you need, and everybody, all practitioners need to be familiar with the other rules as well to answer these questions. But that's a good question. Thank you, Mercedes. Anybody else?
I have another one.
Go for it.
I have been asked on several occasions for HIPAA protective orders for at the end of a case or at the end of the use of the materials. Have you ever heard that, or what do you? I mean, I don't have any problem creating them. For example, there have been parents who've asked us to either return or destroy protected health information to them because we don't keep the official files. The official files are either with DCF or the court. What do you think of any of that?
I would be reluctant to destroy anything within my files until I looked at what your record keeping requirements are. And I understand the program doesn't keep the official file, but it's possible the program may have information that they gained that other people don't that is part of their file. So I would want to just look at your record keeping requirements, and especially attorney's record keeping requirements, and make sure that if you have any information that's unique to your record that you've taken all the steps you need to. Do that, and also keeping in mind that if it's HIPAA and medical information, it's probably not something that's going to be subject to any type of public records request, but you also have to analyze that before you destroy any information because there's record keeping requirements pursuant to Chapter 119. So although I would be amenable at the end of a case to the concept of destroying or receiving information, you have to do it in reference to what your obligations are for other record keeping requirements, particularly as a government entity for 119.
And the, And the thing, and that's another good question. Yeah, and again, we're just kicked back into our standard, our record keeping requirements and our confidentiality provisions. And again, you know, keep in mind that you know, there's not a lot of law restricting restricting child welfare folks regarding HIPAA. And you know, I think you can see the reasons for that a little bit here. You know, every time we've addressed this issue, we are always on the receiving end of a favorable order after we go through all of this, and you know that gets PCA'd, and I imagine that's what's happening in other places. Why you're not seeing a lot of law on it? Because you know, again, again, once you leave the covered entity realm of it all, it's just something that we can address kind of way, really. It's a complicated law, but the application to us is really kind of a succinct argument.
And whoever's typing, if you could please mute your phone. Thank you. All right. Any other questions?
I have a question. This is Sarah out of the Fifth Circuit.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I practice in a couple of different counties, and in one of the counties I practice in, whenever the department is filing, say, a psychological evaluation for a parent or substance abuse records for a parent, they do not serve it on the other parent, and they cite HIPAA for that reason, but it is in the court file, and now that we are e-filing, and most of the circuits have some sort of extranet or a clerk website where you can access most of the records. Is that accurate, that the other parent is not entitled to that information?
It's difficult to say specifically for a particular case, of course. You know, each case is different, but what you're telling me, I'd say no. And I don't really know how the department is relying on HIPAA for
well,
that?
Well, here's where it's that I see where you're at, and you know there's a concept in HIPAA for hybrid agency considered but they've never asserted that. I don't think that they're arguing that, and I've never seen any law on that. It's this is like one of these you know concepts we could talk about in a law article. But the bottom line is the department is not a covered entity. So if the department was sharing the information, they would just need to, again, follow their confidentiality restrictions under Chapter 39. I mean, if they're applying HIPAA, you know, my thinking about that would be that is not.
And I wanted to expand on that a little bit, and that keep in mind that if it's a court-ordered eval, then there's no privacy at all in that. There's a line of cases that basically says that for court-ordered evaluations, because it is done in conjunction with this proceeding, that it's known that it's to be used in that proceeding, that it's not done with a reasonable expectation that it would be kept private, so therefore it's not entitled to the same privileges and privacy protections you might have if you just went out and went to a psychologist or psychiatrist on your own. So there's another component there as well as far as why it would not be protected information.
Thank you both so much.
Sure.
Okay, so everybody, I guess there's no more problems with HIPAA anymore. I'm just kidding. This is a situation that pops up once in a while. It seems like some of you out there have addressed it, you know, very well. We're just covering the concepts as to how it relates to our world. I think it's kind of like the UCC. It looks very daunting when you look at the thing, but, you know, in your individual little world, generally speaking, you can funnel it down to a manageable size, and so that's what we try to do here. Really appreciate you guys being on the line. I mean, if you have any follow-up questions, I don't know, are you have any follow-up questions, or if you think of it, you look at the PowerPoint and you have additional questions, to contact us. Our contact information is included in there. So, again, one more, going once, going twice. Any questions?
Well, we thank you all for being here and hope that this has been helpful. And everybody have a holiday next week.